Sound okay?
Yes.
Okay, great. Well, as I was saying, I'm sure you're all awake after the last session. I'm sorry I missed that. Sounded like a lively little debate. Mine's not very controversial, so I won't have the entertainment the last one had, but I hope I'll have something useful for you. My name's Jennifer Lynch. I'm from the University of Missouri at Rolla. We used a content management system to construct a new extranet for our website. And I'm going to be talking about that process that we went through, hopefully telling you some things that you can use. Let me bring this up here. Come on, little laptop. Okay, let's go back one. We began the process in 2001, and this is going to be the little story of our progress. And how many of you are here from universities? Going to be looking. Okay, well, that gives me a good idea. I'm really hoping that what I'm telling you will be useful. I want you to feel free to pipe up and ask questions at any time. I'll try and get through my little shtick as quickly as possible, so there's plenty of time at the end, but don't be afraid to interrupt me. I'm going to be talking about challenges that are specific to universities. Universities aren't the only ones that have these problems, but there are some commonalities. Whether you are from a large university or a small university, whether you're from an engineering school or a liberal arts school, I think you're going to find that you have similar problems. And I've grouped them into situational problems that occur just by the nature of how the web usually grew on the universities, the technological problems that you'll encounter in trying to fit a new web technology onto a perhaps incompatible system, and the political problems, which you will most undoubtedly encounter. And I'm going to say right away, I'm very happy to be here, and I'm especially glad to be in the contextual track of this conference, because my techno-wizards, the marvelous Michelle Heiser, who researched our CMS, Typo 3, and set up our site, and the amazing Alex Heiser, indefatigable troubleshooter and network workaround person, were not able to be here at the conference. And so if you have any really detailed questions, technical questions, I'm going to refer you to the Web Divas at home to give you the details, because I am by no stretch of the imagination an expert on the technical details. My role, I'm the manager of our web team. I do the architecture, the content, the political tap dancing. I do presentations. They do all the technical work. So if you have questions that I cannot answer about technical problems, please email webdivas@umr.edu. And I'll show that up later. We got that name. The IT department was in charge of the web, and when our department was created, they said, "Well, we're the webmaster. What are you?" And I said, "I guess we're the Web Divas." It was just Michelle and I at that point. So for better or worse, that's where we are. That's our name. Let's talk about the situational challenges first. And I'm sure this is going to sound pretty familiar to you all. Universities, by their very nature, you had some early adapters, a department set up a website, another department said, "Hey, that looks good to me, let's have one of our own, let's make it look different so we don't look the same." After you get enough of these constituent sites, somebody says, "Oh my God, let's have something that's overreaching, you know, let's make it look," or at least have something, a guide to all these sites. So you get a few top-level pages that sort of guide you into those disparate sites. So you've got decentralized control of all the component sites. And as you know, that means a lot of inconsistency, and I'll talk about that a little bit later. you have a diversity of target audiences. You're trying to meet the needs of your faculty, your staff, and your students, all your internal audiences, and you have all your external audiences. You have your prospective students foremost. You have your alumni. You have donors. We're primarily a technological engineering and research institution, so we're trying to enhance our reputation, our research, so we're looking at scholarly audiences as well. Usually because those sites grew up within the departments, the focus is more on the internal audiences and their needs. With shrinking budgets, the pressure to bring more money, bring more students, bring more contributions into the university, the emphasis is shifting toward meeting the needs of the external audiences. You also have administrators, some of which may not even know how to use email, some of which are very enthusiastic about the web. We're very fortunate to have a chancellor at UMR who sees the importance of the web, and a board of trustees that is very supportive of enhancing our website. So we were lucky in that respect. But you also have changing personnel that are creating this web. You usually have a faculty person who's doing it in their spare time. You have secretaries and administrative assistants who are already overworked and a little bit disgruntled at having to do something else. All are doing their best, I must say. You have students, some of whom are very technically gifted, and they set up some beautiful, beautiful, complicated, and delightful sites that, once they're gone, nobody can maintain. And there's a number of reasons for that, not just the technical, but the way they organize things. So all of these factors, is this sounding familiar to you all? Okay, good. That's a situational. The technical challenges are that your existing infrastructures are usually set up for the new web technologies. They were set up to handle the email, to carry on the day-to-day machinations of the university. The IT department is usually in charge of the web, and they're more focused on those priorities, getting the email to run, you know, making sure that the servers are up, that kind of thing. So they're usually stretched with their resources, and innovation costs money, and it costs training time, and a lot of times IT departments don't have that the luxury of that. E-commerce has been a very big problem with us. The university system, we're part of the University of Missouri system. They are developing their own e-commerce solution. It's not complete yet, but they really don't want us using outside vendors. So that moves into the political, but it is also a technical challenge as well. Oftentimes you have a lack of skilled web programmers. In our IT department, they're more focused on the servers and things like that. While you have people that can do HTML, in our IT department, I don't think there's anybody, not a single web programmer, that can use the new web programming languages and CMSs. They're not up on it. And they don't really have time to do that. And then there's the pressure to utilize the current system rather than innovate, because as I said, it takes money, it takes time, and universities are notoriously short both. The political challenges are probably the most difficult, to tell you the truth. It all does come down to people. And in the end, and in universities especially, there's a sense of territorialism. These departments have worked very hard on their sites, and they're very proud of their sites, and they don't see why everything has to be the same. And so there's a territorialism that happens. There usually isn't one person people can look to guide the web process, because it's so decentralized. Getting consensus among the constituents. Anybody have some trouble? If you've gone through this process, it is so difficult to get people to agree. And academicians, especially, it's difficult to get them to agree because they have a big stake in their own opinions. and they're very good at defending them. Encouraging buy-in is one of the most important things, and that can be difficult as well. For the same reason, we've already got this going. Why should we invest in something else, our time? This is probably the hardest, is making progress and maintaining your impetus through the inevitable, unending committee gauntlet. It's the death by a thousand cuts, and I mean that in every sense of the word. Well, except the literal, I suppose. But it feels, you know, it's very difficult to keep enthusiasm alive. It's very difficult to keep your vision together as it goes from committee to committee to committee. You have a committee to choose a committee. You have a committee to, you know, evaluate the committee. It does go on forever. It's a huge and slow animal slinking toward Bethlehem. And marketing can be a four-letter word to academicians. It's a base activity. And, you know, it's somehow, I would think it would be especially hard at a place like Harvard. You want to maintain a certain tone. You know, you want to represent yourself as a serious scholarly place. But the damnable thing is you're talking to teenagers, for the most part, with prospective students. And they really don't want to hear, UMR has a long established tradition of whatever. You know, you need to make your content specific to your audiences. And that's very difficult to convince professors that really they're not lowering themselves by actually adopting the language of their target audiences. These are some decisions to make and steps to take. Bob was just telling me about his, in terms of choosing a CMS, he has got a wonderful project going, and you're going to be talking about that after me, so I would encourage you to stay and listen to Bob. He's going to be a very good resource for, say, you know, for helping you compare, and his project will be a good resource for helping you compare different types of CMSs. So I'm going to refer you to him for the actual detailed comparisons or places to go to find out about that. But these are steps that we think are very good for you to take, some of which we didn't have the luxury of taking. So I'm here as a veteran to tell you the mistakes we made, don't do what we did, and give you some guidance there. Determining your goals sounds simple until you start actually trying to articulate them. It's a necessary step. You want to, and I'll go into more detail as I go through our story, our little pilgrim's progress. You need, this is very important, to assess your existing web and resources. That's not only the IT support, not only your infrastructure, but what kind of support do you have within your IT department for the people who are going to be maintaining this web and creating your sites. You need to look at the usability of the existing web. What works, what doesn't work. And if you are doing as we did, trying to market to external audiences, it's a very good idea to have an external marketing agency come in and look at your marketing on your current site. It'll give you a lot of good ideas about where you need to go. We were fortunate that they already had StayMates coming in. Are you familiar with StayMates? STAMATS. They build university websites. They do marketing, consulting, and things like that. Oh, better not do that. We were lucky because they were having a communications audit at the time that we were formed. So we had that information to utilize as we went into our project. After you've done these things, you need to be thinking about, do we want to rehab or build a new web? And there's some advantages and disadvantages to both. For our purposes, and I'll explain our reasons down the line here, it was better to build a new web. It's a lot like At one point in my checkered past, I did rehabbing old houses. And while you have the character of the old house to deal with, and you have materials that are already there, it sure is simpler and oftentimes cheaper to begin from the ground up, because you're constantly doing workarounds and figuring out how to make things fit. And there's some big considerations about that. How much cooperation are you going to get from the rest of the campus if you rehab? Those kind of factors, you want to weigh them in. Are you going to develop this in-house? Or are you going to outsource it? And you want to be thinking, when you think about this, how much control do you want over the final product? How much tailoring to your specific needs do you want? And in our case, do you have any money? We didn't. So that made a very easy decision for us. We were an in-house development. You also wanted to look at your expertise. Do you have people that can really do what you're after? I've got this, the fifth step. It really should have been the first step. But how do you involve the campus and communicate progress? How do you decide who's heading up this endeavor? And the sixth is also important. These are things to think about before you even begin. What kind of provisions are you going to make to keep this sucker running? Where are you going to get your content? What kind of provisions are you making in your infrastructure, not only for your current project, but what you're going to be doing in the future, what you envision doing in the future? What resources do you have on campus already that you can bring to this and help maintain what you've already got going? And they've certainly got me on a short... Oh, yes, what's her question? Yes.
Sure.
Oh, well, thank you. Yes, sir.
Oh, yes. Thanks. One of your original statements was about an internal focus as being characteristic, internal audience focus. It sounds like, if I'm following you, that what you've described is a project process actually of convincing academics that the focus should be external.
Not exactly.
Okay, well...
You've got to meet all those audiences' needs. You do have to... In our case, we had to create something that wasn't there. We really weren't addressing our external audiences' needs, but I'm glad you asked that. No, you need to meet all those audiences, for sure. You've got to keep your university working, but you've got to have students coming in there to pay for those people to have those internal audiences and keep getting money. So, yeah, both of them. I might argue that point with you, but perhaps after I've raced through the rest of these slides. But, yeah, I think you do. Call me crazy, but okay, this is our little story. I call it a winning but cautionary tale, because although we have been incredibly successful, we have 1,000 more students in the first year the thing went up. That's not all due to us, I want to say immediately. We work with a group with a publications department, with a video producer, and with the PR department. The admissions is making a big effort toward, but we were an important part of that recruitment. We've been winning national and regional and national awards for our website. We're getting inquiries all the time about our website and our content management system. Our alumni are more involved than they've ever been before because of the website. And So I'd say, yes, we've been very successful in what we're doing, but it's cautionary because oftentimes success does not ensure longevity. And those situations, the political and the situational, are still playing a part. And our story isn't finished by a long shot. I'm going to talk about the steps. I phrased our little story in terms of the steps I was talking to you about. Originally, my department was created to work inside university advancement. I don't know where you have your web located, but university advancement already had the publications, the PR, and later the video production there. The idea was that university advancement was looking out for the good of the entire university, so they wouldn't focus completely on recruitment, they wouldn't focus completely on development campaigns. So it was decided to put us in university advancement. We were created to market to external audiences. The web was going to stay in control of the IT department. There were about 500,000 pages to that, and we were going to fight them for that, you know. Welcome to it. But we started out with a pretty limited responsibility in that respect. The first month we did an online interactive viewbook based on award-winning recruitment suite that publications and admissions did. We did HTML emails. We, you know, did a number of different things. Admissions asked us to redo their site since that carried all the weight of the recruitment. That's a changing trend as well. We're making the whole site. We took a lot of things out of admissions. But at first, we were just going to do admissions. And that's when we started thinking about a CMS. Michelle rightly said, as soon as we create a good site, no matter how good the architecture is, no matter how good the content is, it's going to start decaying as soon as we hand it over. They, too, were stretched for resources. And so we thought a CMS would handle a lot of the problems that they were going to encounter in keeping that site current and effective. It began to dawn on us. We were trying to influence the IT department to adapt some of the marketing strategies that we were utilizing in branding the university, but not having varied success with that. I came up with the idea, a proposal, that we separate the web into two parts. An extranet for our external audiences, and that's a trend that universities are going toward, and an intranet for the internal audiences. This had a number of advantages. One, we didn't have to duke it out with everybody to make change. It allowed us to start from the very beginning, to start clean. The departments could still keep their sites. We wouldn't have to fight them for that. They could keep their sites and they could do whatever they wanted to with it. The IT department still got to have that control. So we thought, okay, we'll do that. The Board of Trustees was quite excited about this. God love them. They reached in their pockets. And I should say we had a $5,000 budget. That's our budget for our department every year. That's staples and software and whatever. They came up with $60,000 for us and said, go to it. The only catch was we had 7 months to construct it from scratch. And that's determining what our audience needs were. That's finding content. That's finding graphics. That's finding, researching a CMS. It's the whole kielbasa in 7 months. Like good little masochists, we said, sure, we'll do it. And it allowed us to hire on Alex. At that point, it was just Michelle and I. And it allowed us to hire Alex on as an independent contractor, and they made that into a permanent position with our success. I didn't want to spend the $60,000 on a consultant. Didn't want to spend $60,000 on a commercial CMS. One, because we like open source community. We kind of like that philosophy, but it was also a necessity. We knew down the road we were going to have to be paying for outsourced usability studies and marketing studies, and that costs a bunch. So why spend money when we don't have to? Save the money for when we know we need it. And if we could find a CMS, open source CMS, that would meet our needs, we were going to go for it. So Michelle started her research. I'm going to have to move along faster, or this thing isn't going to let me. Secondly, you want to assess the terrain, figure out what you've got. In our case, we had 500,000 pages of disorganized sites. It was just a labyrinthine nightmare. There was the top-level pages were in control of the IT department. There were about 10. They were lists of links, not much guidance for the users. It was primarily internal audience-oriented. There were about close to 8,900 broken links on the top five levels. When you went from one department site to another, it was like driving into a new country. You'd think you were driving into Kansas and you find yourself in the Balkans. You know, it was completely different. And so there was no consistent design or navigation. There was no overreaching architecture. It was just a kind of a mess out there. So we took a look at that and put that into our thinking. There was uncoordinated resources. You had some departments that hired their own IT people and set up their own servers. You had departments who'd hired PR people who were doing their own thing. It was very disorganized. And you had a very outdated technology infrastructure. So those were all considerations we had to take into account. Rehab or the road, you know, it's kind of like, can I send this guy to rehab or shall I just get a divorce and start over again? And I told you the story of our progress toward a web and why we chose a CMS. I think I've pretty much covered this. I want to leave time for questions. But in thinking about this for yourselves, you need to be thinking about the time you have, the money you have, to rehab an old site. I think it can be done, but the ones that I've seen tend to be a little bit uncoordinated, and it's a slow process. It's little by little. We had 7 months, period. So we decided a new web. Why utilize the CMS? It's got three really, really important things. One, it's going to give you consistency. You've got a template, and that's going to keep your design constant. You've got control over the content, the tone, the navigation, and the branding. You're going to have more currency of the site. For one thing, your links aren't going to be broken as long as you're operating inside that CMS. You're going to have currency of content, because if you make it easier for your content providers to slap stuff in there, they're going to do it more often. It's much easier to go to a web page and cut and paste and put in content than it is to create a whole new HTML page and go through all that process. It takes a lot less time, it takes a lot less training, and everybody was short on that. So you're going to... The easier you make it for your constituents, I know this is obvious, the more likely they are going to be to keep this thing going. And then finally, control. I've never thought of myself as a control freak, but I've rapidly become one because it makes a great deal of difference if you can control who has access to what. You can control the way the files are arranged. When we started to redo the admission site, there were 4,000 disorganized files, some of which were a Star Trek initiative they'd done that was delightfully funny that they'd done some years before. It made the websites that sucked the first within 5 days of going up. That was still in there somewhere. The files, you couldn't tell where things were. CMS makes that very, very easy. That page tree is delightful. I tend to be a chaotic kind of person, so any kind of organizational tool is very helpful. The users can only alter the content on the pages. They cannot change the branding. They can't change the headers or footers, the basic look, or the navigation. That's a great benefit. And then, of course, we had that 7 month deadline hanging over our heads. Here's your options. Although you may think of some others, but you can do all of it yourself. You can utilize an open source solution. If you've got the expertise to do that, create your own CMS, develop all your databases and templates. You can do some of it yourself and hire commercial support. Or you can hire an outside agency to do it all. As I said, do it all yourself. You're going to have a lot more control. Do some of it yourself and buy commercial support. That's a pretty good option, too. When we could not really deal with the workarounds and the troubleshooting and the problems we had trying to fit our system into the existing infrastructure, we went to an off-site host. And that made a great deal of difference for us. We didn't have to spend a lot of time trying to figure out how to adapt something that really wasn't quite, you know, we were having to figure out how to get around these complicated AFS permission systems and things like that. So, and we were also burdening an already overworked IT department. So going off-site really helped. Our solution was that we developed off-site and we had a production server on-site and we are synced every night. So, let's see. Hiring an outside company to do it all, that's a good way to go if you don't have the expertise or the IT support to do it. But I think you tend to get a less tailored thing. It's going to cost you a great deal of money, and you're still going to have to provide that content. You're still going to have to provide all the things that keep that website going. So, just because you've gone to an outside company doesn't mean that it's taken care of for you. And that's what I'm dealing with here. What are some potential problems? Jerry McGovern will tell you everything's content, and in a lot of respects, he's right. CMS makes it easier to deal with your content, but by golly, you better still be working on it. You might need a faster server, database server, and you need expertise for people. It takes more expertise to set it up. We are incredibly lucky to have Michelle and Alex on our staff because they are really, really, really good. And I knew I could trust them to come up with a solution that would work. And I want to say to you, if you decide to do it yourself, one of the most important decisions you can make is who you hire to do that technical work. Find somebody that not only is technically adept in the current technologies, but look for people who are enthusiastic about change, who are curious, and who will keep learning as they go. And they need to be obsessive-compulsive people as well, because that really helps. But the more attention you pay to the people who are doing the technical work for you, the better. And look for people that will continue to develop, because things are always going to be outdated. I think it was Sam, he's not here now, was asking me about exit strategies. Well, what do you do when you're, how do we adapt to the newest thing? Anything you choose is going to be outdated at some point. So that's why it's very important to pick people who can go on and keep track of changes and enjoy that kind of change, who are out there looking. These are the things this did for us. We went from having about 8,900 broken links to zero. Our training time, it takes about 15 minutes to train a content provider to use our CMS. We've got consistency. We're having departments. It's like a gradual conversion. Departments are coming over, seeing if we can help them, trying to find ways that they can be on the extranet. And if we can find an external audience for them, we put them on the extranet. We have an email this page to a friend. This was an early indicator. And I think this is a very good thing to include on your university websites. It is the web equivalent of word-of-mouth advertising, and you can't beat it. We had almost 28,000 people use it the first month it went up. And this was a site that didn't get very many hits before. So that was an early indicator that we were doing something that might just be working. Okay, why typo 3? Do I ever wish the Heisers were here to tell you all the technical details and that? But as I said, feel free to email them and at the Web Divas site, or email, and they can give you more details than I can. But we had to go. Typo 3 was free. That was a big one. It had a proven reliability. It's being used pretty extensively in Europe and by universities in Europe. So we knew that it was going to be reliable for us. It was the most flexible we were looking at the time. Someone was telling me EasyPublish has come up with an update that makes it more flexible than it was. We looked at EasyPublish, but at the time we looked at it, it wasn't as flexible as Typo 3. I'll talk about some more of the features they've got in the next slide, but it had a lot of things that we really wanted. We wanted to have an image library. We wanted to be able to resize images from the server side. Typo 3 automatically resizes an image for you, and it changes the format for you. We get graphics in all different formats, so that was an important thing for us. It was very easy to use, and it was very easy to train those web content providers to use. And I was the everyman of our trials. We figured if I could do it, anybody could do it. And so I was the test case there. Another reason that I didn't put on here was we were very impressed with that. Oh my God, it's 12 o'clock. We were very impressed with the open source community that they had. These are some of the, I'm going to race through here, so you can stay and ask questions if you want to. These are a few of the features that they have. Another important feature is hiding and unhiding pages. You can time them. For instance, when we have homecoming, we can time our many sites to appear for that, and it will automatically appear on the date we want it to, and it will automatically go away after homecoming's over. You can edit content on the page for us visual folks, immediately seeing your changes. You can edit it from the back end. It meets the needs of all these constituents. If you're an author, you can put in all different kinds of multimedia content. If you're an administrator or a content manager, you can really detail what kind of access that people have. You can go into the log and see who's working and on what. You can collaborate on pages. That complete separation of the surface and the content really comes in handy. When we want to change a branding initiative, we can just change the template and all the pages fall right into place. I think I've covered a lot of this. But these are some of the things that we were considering. We had the expertise. We didn't have the budget. We had to go off-site for our development server at first. Network outages were corrupting our database all the time. The reliability of the off-site server and the help support was so good that it really made a difference. And it was the time. This was the question on campus when our site went up. Who the heck are these web divas and what have they done with our web? We didn't have time to prepare the campus. The IT department was supposed to do that. That wasn't done as thoroughly as it should have been, so this was a big surprise for people. Don't do what we did. Instead, ask for your input early, get feedback, educate before, during, and after the process, and we provide monthly web statistics summaries of for those people who want them and for people who are editing our web to let them know what's going on with the web. Get your content feeds in place. We made a maintenance schedule. Every page of our 2,000-page site, well, it's up to 3,000 pages now, is in an Excel spreadsheet. When we train people, we give them that schedule, and it has all the date-sensitive pages marked and how often they need to be updated or looked at or reviewed. Let's see, test and refine, that should go without saying, but it's something that it's really hard to take time to do those usability studies and refine when you're still in the process. If you can, among this advice, again, involve the campus. If you can integrate it into an overall marketing plan, if you're going for that, you better do that. Think about that beforehand, too. Audience-based links. You can have your topic links, but keep your audience-based links, too. And make sure you know where your content's coming from. Remember, the technology is the easiest. Politics is the hardest. Make sure you're adequately staffed. And don't assume that the best place is in the IT department for your external audiences. And the final one is the most important. It's a stressful process. It can be difficult for people. So whatever you can do to make your techno wizards happy, you keep them as happy as you can. The administrators tend to think that people are replaceable or, you know, units. One techie is as good as another. We know that's ridiculous. So if you have good expertise in there, do everything you can to keep them happy. Here's some resource links. I have some handouts printed out. Not enough for everybody, I'm afraid. But we'll be putting this online on our WebDiva site. And in fact, it may be up there now. If I know Michelle and Alex, they probably already have it up there. And again, please make sure to contact us if you have extra questions. I'm sorry I didn't leave you enough time, but I'll be happy to answer any questions you have. After Bob's presentation, you're going next now?